Please stand by as we're about to begin. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Coca-Cola FEMSA's first quarter 2019 conference call. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open the conference up for questions and answers after the presentation. During this conference call, management may discuss certain forward-looking statements concerning Coca-Cola FEMSA's future performance and should be considered as good faith estimates made by the company. These forward-looking statements reflect management's expectations and are based upon certainly currently available data. Actual results are subject to future events and uncertainties, which can materially impact the company's actual performance. At this time, I will now turn the conference over to Mr. John Santamaria, Chief Executive Officer of FEMSA Coca-Cola.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us to discuss our first quarter 2019 results. Constantinos Spas, our CFO, and Maria Zila, our Director of Corporate Investor Relations, are with us here today. I am pleased with our company's positive results to start the year, despite currency volatility and uncertain economic conditions that affected our financial performance. In Mexico and Central America, we reported healthy top and bottom line growth as we continue to leverage on our state-of-the-art analytics capabilities. Our South America division's performance was driven mainly by a 9.1% volume growth in Brazil, where we continue to gain share across categories thanks to our robust portfolio and relentless point-of-sale execution. To protect our profitability, we continue implementing mitigation actions to navigate very complicated situations in Colombia and Argentina as well. We reported top-line growth of close to 5% for the first quarter of 2019, while our comparable revenues grew 10%. This growth was driven by prices ahead of inflation in most of our operations, excellent revenue management, and very agile and compelling point-of-sale execution. However, these positive factors are partially offset by unfavorable currency translation effects from all of our operating currencies, which represented the largest headwind of the quarter to our financial statements. Our operating income declined slightly less than 1%, 0.9%, while our comparable operating income increased by more than 9%. Our reported operating income decline was driven mainly by higher PET prices, higher concentrate costs, and operating expenses, and the depreciation of most of our operating currencies as applies to our U.S. dollar-denominated raw material costs, which were partially offset by sugar sweetener savings, primarily in Mexico. Our operating cash flow grew 4.6%, while our comparable operating cash flows increased by more than 11% year-on-year. Consequently, our controlling net income increased by more than 7% for earnings per share of pesos 15 cents, which is equivalent to 1.23 pesos for earnings per unit of the newly floated unit that we just split. During the quarter, we took significant steps to enable our strategy to continue guiding our vision to ensure sustainable profit growth. In portfolio, we continue revitalizing and expanding the CSD category through affordability and innovation, highlighted by the positive performance of Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar in many of our markets, primarily in Brazil, where Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar is growing at double-digit rates, and surprisingly, even in Argentina, where under such difficult circumstances, Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar continues to grow 3%. In non-carbonates, we're taking important steps towards gaining scale and improving our profitability. As an example, in Brazil, we have restructured our portfolio and improved our competitiveness, which resulted in double-digit growth in these very promising categories as compared with the previous year. In Mexico, our Santa Clara dairy portfolio and Monster Energy drink products both grew double digits, while our Powerade brand grew mid-single digits. We are very encouraged by the innovation pipeline that we have developed together with the Coca-Cola Company. As announced this week, there are launches coming across categories like the new Isolita product that we're launching in Mexico that will boost our play in the higher growth enhanced hydration category. And once we prove this concept here, we will roll to Brazil as well. Other initiatives such as Coca-Cola Coffee, which we already launched last year in Brazil with very positive results, we will be launching in different markets. and we will also be participating in the new product category developed by Coca-Cola in Coca-Cola Energy as the year develops. Importantly, highlighting the flexibility of our portfolio, we continue successfully rolling out affordability initiatives in territories that are going through a challenging macroeconomic environment, like Argentina. Just to give you a sense, the decline in disposable income in Buenos Aires, the region where we operate, has been much deeper than the rest of the country, affecting the consumption and social mood much more so in Buenos Aires than in other territories. And here, what we're doing very quickly is responding with different packaging alternatives to ensure that we continue to engage with consumers, both from a returnable and non-returnable perspective. Our operating model transformation keeps on moving as well. As part of this strategy, we have developed important capabilities for digital expansion of Coca-Cola FEMSA by implementing transformational initiatives in the commercial, distribution, and logistics and procurement fronts. Our analytics capability in Mexico and Colombia have delivered very positive results for us, highlighted by an improved point of sale execution and improvements to the returns of our promotional activities at retail. We are encouraged by expanding these analytics capability to Brazil and Argentina during 2019. Our transformational initiatives in distribution and logistics are already generating savings. As an example, of Cuff Logistics Services platform has generated $15 million worth of savings during 2018, and we have all countries already rolled out on the logistics platform as of the end of 2018. Importantly, the integration of our recent acquisition in Guatemala is going according to plan, with synergies of more than $4 million. Furthermore, completing these acquisitions that allows us to create favorable operating conditions to ensure the new business certain sustainability and strong growth plans for this operation, and gives us certainty for strong growth in this very promising market. The results we're having in Guatemala are very positive. We're seeing accelerated growth, and we continue to see very, very ample opportunity in that country. As we continue to assess our business model in each of the geographies where we operate, we are developing a major initiative that will not only strengthen Coca-Cola FEMSA and implement new ways to work, but also streamline our operations by ensuring their efficiency. We are redesigning processes, clarifying priorities, enabling agility in the organization, and refocusing our resources to the market. We will have more news on that during our next conference call, but this is a major initiative for Coca-Cola FEMSA. With these initiatives and our cultural evolution, we continue to strengthen our organization to support our strategy and accelerate a digitally driven business model. Finally, on April 11th, we completed the previously announced stock split and listing of our shares in the form of units. As a result, our new units, comprised of 5 Series L shares and 3 Series B shares, began trading under the ticker KOFUBL on the Mexican Stock Exchange. And on our company's American Depositary Shares continue to trade on the New York Stock Exchange under the ticker KOF, with each ADS now representing 10 units. This new capital structure allows our company to increase its capacity to issue new equity, which may be used as consideration in future share-based acquisitions as well as for general corporate purposes. It's important to stress that these adjustments do not change the percentage of ownership currently held by our company's shareholders. In addition, the Series B shares contained in our new units provide additional voting rights to minority shareholders. Moving forward, we will continue to leverage our disciplined approach to capital allocation, and we feel confident that the listing of Series L and B shares in the form of our units will help us unlock value for our shareholders and position Coca-Cola FEMSA for new growth opportunities and expansion. With that, I will hand this call over to Constantino for continuous comment.
Good morning. Let me begin by saying that the comparability of our financial and operating results for the first quarter of 2019 as compared to the same period of 2018 was affected by 4 main factors. Number one, volumes and financial results of our recently acquired territories in Guatemala and Uruguay were consolidated as of May 1st and July 1st, 2018, respectively. On December 13, 2018, we completed the sale of our Philippines operation. Therefore, according to IFRS 5, the Philippines operation is presented as a discontinued operation as of January 1st, 2018, and our consolidated financial statements were represented. Consequently, the company's consolidated financial results were not comparable to our consolidated financial statements published in the first quarter of 2018. Third, as of July 1, 2018, our Argentina operation was reported as a hyperinflationary subsidiary. This means that we had to re-express the results of any given month in real terms to the end of the reporting period. Thus, the results of our Argentina operation in January and February were re-expressed in real terms as of March 31st. Also, we have to use the end-of-period exchange rate to translate the reported results of our Argentina operation to Mexican pesos. Fourth, starting January 1st, 2019, we adopted the new standard of FIRS 16 leases, which introduces a unique accounting lease model for tenants. The main impacts of the new standard are derived from the recognition of lease arrangements as rights of use and liabilities to make such payments. In addition, the linear operating lease expense is replaced by a depreciation expense for the right to use the assets and an interest expense for the lease liability that will be recognized at present value. Our Mexico, Brazil, and Colombia operations are the most significantly affected by our adoption of the new standard. At the adoption rate, our company estimated that we recognize a right of use asset of less than 1% of total assets as of December 31st, 2018, and a corresponding lease liability for all of our company's lease arrangements in our consolidated financial statement. To better describe our business performance, for certain information, we present comparable figures, excluding the effects of mergers and acquisitions, translation effects resulting from exchange rate movements, and the results of Argentina because this operation has become a hyperinflationary subsidiary. In the first quarter of 2019, more than 50% of the negative effect of our reported figures was explained by currency translation effects. Moving on to our consolidated results for the first quarter of 2019, our sales volume increased 1% to close to 800 million unit cases, with our transactions growing 3.3%. Our comparable sales volume was flat, with our comparable transactions growing 1%. Our revenues grew 4.8%, while our comparable revenues grew 10%. Our gross profit increased 3.3%, while our comparable gross profit increased 8.8%. Our operating income declined by less than 1%, while our comparable operating income grew 9.2%. Finally, our operating cash flow increased 4.6% with flat margins, while our comparable cash flow increased 11.1%. Excluding the adoption of IFRS 16 leases, our operating cash flow would have contracted 30 basis points. Now I will briefly discuss each of operations highlights for the quarter. In Mexico, we began the year with solid revenue growth of close to 8%, driven by prices ahead of inflation and positive volumes in January and February. However, in March, facing a tougher comparable base, our volume performance softened and was also affected by two main factors. Primarily, the price increase done during the month, and number two, the Easter holiday shift from March last year to April this year. These dynamics led to a volume contraction of 1.9% for the quarter. We continue strengthening our portfolio by implementing our affordability strategy. As a result, multi-serve returnable CSDs grew mid-single digits. Going forward, we're implementing strategies to activate the market and efficiently absorb price increases, accelerate refillables, and magic price points as we reignite our single-serve presentations, always looking to provide valuable options to our consumers. Moving to Central America, we reported positive revenues as we have been able to increase prices ahead of inflation as part of our revenue management strategy. For the quarter, we reported 25% volume growth, driven by volume growth in Costa Rica and the consolidation of our new acquisitions in Guatemala. These operations continue the positive volume trend, while Panama experienced a tough consumer environment and Nicaragua continues to operate in a challenging socio-political environment. Our positive performance in Costa Rica was mainly driven by a strong comeback in the flavor category, brands and continuous momentum for Cola's portfolio. In Guatemala, we continue gaining share while our implementation of route to market is driving significant volume growth. During the quarter, our Mexico and Central American division's top-line growth and expense control strategies enabled us to increase our operating income and expand our margins, even in the face of higher PET costs, higher concentrate prices, and an unfavorable currency hedging position in Mexico as compared to the same period of last year. On a comparable basis, mainly excluding our acquisitions in Guatemala, our operating income and operating cash flow increased in the mid-single digits. Moving south onto South America, we continue the positive volume trend in Brazil, marked by our sixth consecutive quarter of volume growth, as volume grew 9.1% for the quarter, thanks to our single-serve and returnable presentation and market share gains across CSDs and NCB categories. We're reigniting growth via our efforts in portfolio and improved points of sale execution, as well as a wide range of digital initiatives. We are encouraged by our Brazilian operations position to continue its positive performance. As highlights for this quarter, our single-serve non-returnable CSDs, our water portfolio, and our stills grew double digits, driven by the brand Coca-Cola, Sprite, Cristal, and Del Valle. In Mexican peso terms, our revenue was affected by a negative currency translation effect. Although in local currency terms, our prices were aligned with inflation as compared to the same period last year. Although we observed an overall optimistic macro environment in Colombia for 2019, as we commented on our last call, starting last January, Colombia's fiscal reform changed the way VAT is applied to sugar beverages, from a monophase to a multi-phase scheme. This impacts all of the products in the chain, from our distributors to our final consumers. Consequently, during the quarter, our volumes, although negative, contracted less than expected. We are focused on restructuring our operation to face these new business conditions in the correct manner. As part of this strategy, we're implementing mitigation actions to protect our profitability as the year goes on, such as, number one, increasing prices. Two, controlling and reducing expenses. Three, redeveloping a route to market and supply chain networks. Four, refocusing our portfolio on more profitable SKUs. And five, resizing our operation by taking tough measures in workforce reduction. In Argentina, the country's economic recession has proved tougher than expected, especially in Buenos Aires, with declining disposable income deeply affecting this market. We continue with our pricing ahead of inflation to mitigate hiking inflation and protect profitability. Therefore, our volumes have fallen by 32% as compared to the first quarter of last year. We continue to expect a complex, volatile, and uncertain operating environment in Argentina, fueled by the electoral calendar, but we are utilizing levers such as pricing and resizing of our business and our portfolio as planned. All necessary measures are being taken, aiming at surpassing current macroeconomic headwinds. With respect to Uruguay, we continue to capture savings and accelerate synergies by increasing production efficiency and reducing wastage. In the first quarter of 2019, we reported sales volumes of 10.6 million unit cases with pricing ahead of inflation. We're very encouraged that the sparkling beverage category is gaining share, mainly driven by our Schweppes Pomelo, a grapefruit-flavored sparkling beverage. In addition, we continue to boost single-serve presentations together with growing our low-sugar mix in the portfolio. In the first quarter of 2019, our South America division results were impacted mainly by the performance of our Argentina operation, while our Brazilian operation continued to outperform our top-line expectations and protect its operating margin. The main factors that impacted our division's operating margins were higher PET prices, higher concentrate costs in Brazil related to the reduction of tax credits on concentrate, the depreciation of the average exchange rate of the operating currencies as applied to our U.S. dollar-denominated raw material costs, and higher labor costs. However, favorable sweetener prices and expense control strategies have enabled our operations to partially offset these negative factors. On a comparable basis, excluding our acquisition in Uruguay, hyperinflationary Argentina, and foreign exchange translation effects, our operating income grew 4% and our operating cash flow increased close to 3%. Now, regarding our financial results, below the operating income line, our financing expenses net recorded a reduction of 24%, resulting from a reduction in interest expense, a reduction in foreign exchange loss, as our cash exposure in U.S. dollars was negatively impacted by the appreciation of the Mexican peso during the first quarter of 2019, and a reduction in other financial expenses. Our total debt decreased compared to year-end 2018, mainly due to our company's prepayment of 4.7 billion Mexican pesos of bilateral loans due in October 2019. Additionally, our net leverage ratio ended the first quarter of 2019 at 1.43 times. Our company's weighted average cost of debt for the quarter, including the effect of debt swap to Brazilian reais and Mexican pesos, was 8.0%. During the first quarter, we reported income tax as percentage of income before taxes of 32.6%, compared with 30.7% last year. This increase was driven mainly by the increase in the relative weight of Brazil's profits in the consolidated results, which has a higher tax rate and higher effective tax rate in Colombia. Therefore, our controlling net income increased 7.3%. And with that, I will now hand the call back to John for his final remarks before we open it up for questions and answers.
Thanks, Constantino. Finally, 2019 is a year with challenges and opportunities ahead. From Mexico to Brazil and Argentina, we face different economic and social environments that encourage us to look beyond each day to adjust our portfolio, explore new categories, and identify new packages to satisfy our consumers' and clients' needs. After this quarter's results, we feel positive to see how we started and encouraged about what we can do for the rest of the year. We are clearly focused on our strategic vision of becoming a total global beverage leader while delivering sustainable and profitable growth and expansion. We continue concentrating on our clear objectives of growing our sparkling category, endlessly improving the profitability of our still beverage category and our water category, increasing the efficiency of our operating models, and reinvesting these efficiencies and savings to enable the sustainable profitable growth of our business. Thank you for your continued trust and support. Operator, would like to open up the call for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Please limit your questions to one at this time. Again, press star one to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We'll take our first question from Fernando Overo of Bank of America.
Hi, good morning, everyone, and thanks for taking my questions. I have two, if I may. My first question is related to Brazil. You report an outstanding volume growth, so I was wondering if you can comment on your outlook on consumption in the country. And also, I know it's the first quarter of the year, but does this result change in some way your volume outlook for the year? And what should we expect for in this case for the remaining of the year? That's my first question. And the second one, it's related to innovations. Coca-Cola Company mentioned several times the word innovation on its conference call. So given this new approach, how do you expect this to, in your case, how do you expect this to evolve maybe in the next five years, and if you can give us an idea of how much new launches represent of your sales and if there is any significant difference by country. Thank you so much.
Hi, Fernando. Thanks for your question. This is Constantino. In Brazil, as you mentioned, we're very, very encouraged by the results that we have seen. The positive performance is mainly driven by our relentless focus on point of sale execution, our analytical capabilities in Brazil in order to segment the market and provide targeted initiatives in Brazil by point of sale continue to improve, and we're starting to see the impact of that. At the same time, as we mentioned, we have done a very good job at redefining our portfolio, both on CSDs and NCDs. As we mentioned in our last call last year, we launched around 100 SKUs in Brazil, and this is starting to pay off in the market. And at the same time, within our CSD category, we have developed very strong affordability initiatives in the portfolio that are allowing us to capture consumption from the market. So we expect and continue that to be present during 2019. Good weather has also been a favorable element in our beginning of the year. And our expectation is that although this is very difficult to predict, the weather should continue to be benign in the upcoming months. So that would be a positive element going forward. But to summarize, I think it's a matter of much improved execution in the point of sale and our service levels at our customers on one hand. And on the other hand, we have developed a very strong portfolio that's suited for current Brazilian dynamics. At the same time, we cannot ignore the fact that there is optimism in Brazil right now and that consumption overall is starting to improve in different categories. So that is definitely something of great value for us going forward. On the innovation piece, as we mentioned previously, we are strongly focused on developing our NCB category much more. A great example of that, as John mentioned a few minutes ago, is the launch of Isolite, an oral solution category that's growing phenomenally in Mexico, what we call enhanced hydration product for that particular category. We just launched it. We believe that will be an interesting addition to our lineup in Mexico, and why not in the rest of the markets if it proves successful on one hand. And on the other hand, innovations. We're very optimistic about innovations behind the Coca-Cola brand. As we mentioned, we launched Coca-Cola coffee in Brazil with great results last year. We will roll that out in the rest of our markets in the upcoming months. And at the same time, we're extremely encouraged by the value proposition of Coca-Cola Energy that has been launched recently by the Coca-Cola company in some markets in Europe. We believe that will bring an interesting opportunity for the Coca-Cola brand in our region. So, you know, overall, we're very encouraged by the pipeline that we have with the Coca-Cola company in terms of innovation, and we're very prepared as our organization to bring those innovations in the market. I don't know, John, if you want to.
I think you asked, Fernando, if there was some targets that we have, you know, for innovation going forward. I don't think we have a number yet, but we do see increased innovation coming from the Coca-Cola company at an accelerated pace, which is always very encouraging to us, and something that we're trying to roll out very fast with the Coca-Cola company. And a couple things I would add to Constantino's comments. The fact that we continue to progress very fast through the integration of Ovid, you know, the translation of Unilever to the Coca-Cola system, and we're starting to leverage up the Ovid and the seed plant category across not only where we have operations, but exporting it as well into Central America and places that the brands weren't available before. And we're starting to see that now in Colombia and Costa Rica, where we're starting to use those brands and starting to build those brands as we go forward. So I think on that category, there is a lot of work to be done and a lot of upside, especially since we have an upside from dairy in that area as a source of volume, the very blue ocean for us. And I think again, going forward, one thing that is hard to quantify at this point, but it's something that we're beginning to discuss with the Coca-Cola company is, you know, what do we do with coffee? You know, and they're entering into Costa in terms of having to go out there and play that through in Latin America. So those are very preliminary discussions, but things are going forward in the next 4 or 5 years, as you've discussed.
Okay. Thank you so much for your answers.
Thank you, Fernando.
Thank you, Fernando.
If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the star key followed by the digit 2. And Benjamin Thoreau from Barclays.
Hey, good morning, and thank you very much for taking my question. Actually, it's kind of related and a follow-up question on what Fernando was asking about Brazil. So in the last conference call, if I remember right, you mentioned that the impact on the concentrate taxes in Brazil, you were quantifying them at roughly 400 to 500 million. Now, considering the healthy performance in terms of transaction volume in the first quarter, is that a number you would have to revise on the upside just because of such a significant volume growth, particularly in the CSD categories, what I've seen, or is that still somehow in the range and within your expectations? That would be my question.
Benjamin, very straightforward. It continues to be in the same range of our expectations. We're not revising that particular figure right now, but we continue to assess the impact as we move along in the year, and we continue to implement initiatives if necessary to adapt to a new situation and environment.
Okay, so just to understand, you basically booked that as part of COX, right? And then as a result, that's why gross profit is basically under pressure, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
I understand. Okay, that's it. Well, congratulations on the rest of it. Thanks.
Thank you, Benjamin.
Our next question is from Luis Miranda with Santander.
Hi, Maria and John. Good morning, and thanks for the questions. This is regarding Mexico. And I don't know if you could give us some color. We saw, if my numbers are right, close to a 10% price increase year over year. I was wondering how much is this benefit by the sales mix, and how is the performance of returnables? And the other one is, out of this almost 2% volume decline, 1.9, can you give us some color how much could that be explained by the Easter holidays? Thank you very much.
Yeah, let me answer the second part of your question first. I mean, just to be very clear, volume performance in Mexico was impacted during March 7.4%. It was an important contraction, mainly by softer consumer environment. We're seeing that when you look at ANTAD figures and other retailers, we saw a softer March than what everyone expected. So I think that's a general element across consumption in the Mexican environment. Definitely the calendar shift of Semana Santa or Easter holidays was one important factor, and the price increases that we did at the beginning of the month would definitely affected our volumes. So it's a combination of those three factors that that generated that contraction in March in our Mexican operation. However, I mean, we see that the consumer remains resilient, looking for affordability, and we are placing a lot of emphasis on our affordability strategy in Mexico. So this connects with your first question. I mean, our CSD multi-serve returnables are growing 5.1% during the quarter versus previous year, which shows that the strategy, at least in my point of view, is addressing the elements that we want to address. And the focus up for the rest of the year is to boost our single-serve presentations by driving strong initiatives in the upcoming months, that will benefit our mix going forward. Does that answer your question, Luke?
No, yes, completely. That was very clear. Thank you.
And we'll hear from Scotiabank. We have Philippe Yacos.
Yes, good morning, everyone, and thanks for the space for questions. I wanted to focus a little bit on Coca-Cola Sinosuke. You mentioned you had great performance, particularly in Brazil and Argentina this quarter, and obviously it has become a more important element in the portfolio as time has gone by. So I was hoping you could give us a little more details on how important it is in terms of weight within the portfolio and within sales, how fast it's growing in the different regions, and maybe also give us an idea of how the profitability of the product compares to the rest of the portfolio, because obviously you get rid of some of the sugar costs, but as I understand it, concentrate may also be more expensive in this product. And in some countries, you may also get some benefits from reduced taxes. So maybe if you could discuss a little about the balance of that equation. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Just to begin with the most macro element of your question, I mean, Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar still is a very small part of our portfolio mix, although growing quite fast in almost all geographies, as we mentioned. I think that Brazil is the highlight of that growth right now. But if we look at our total non-caloric mix, it's around 5% of total colas. So it's still quite small in that regard. In terms of the drivers behind the growth of the particular brand that we're talking about, Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar, it's mainly driven by targeted initiatives in the target groups, consumer target groups that we have identified as the main drivers of consumption in non-caloric categories. Also, a significant toolkit of initiatives in promotions at the point of sale that also is driving growth behind that, and some initiatives that are targeted to accompany food occasions in some of the markets. So that's it's a suite of solutions behind Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar that are driving the growth. Regarding profitability, it depends a lot on the geography and the sweetener costs that we have in each of the markets. As an example, in Brazil, sugar remains very competitive in terms of cost, so there is not really a significant advantage in profitability for Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar. However, in other markets where we have higher sweetener costs, it is. In Mexico, just to give you an idea, 2% of Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar is the mix. In Argentina, it's 15%, and in Brazil, it has grown all the way to 8%. So it varies across geographies, but we continue to be very optimistic around the growth of the brand and the fact that the consumer is starting to appreciate our non-caloric solutions for our portfolio in the market.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. Thanks a lot for the caller.
Just let me add one last thing on this. I think in a lot of different markets, we're also putting in pricing and packaging alternatives to expand the brand. You know, in some places, we're going into returnable multi-serves, for example, in Brazil, which we didn't have before. That's giving us a lot more boost in terms of where we are. But we're also putting together pricing and pack strategy that allow for a differential, either in package or in price, in a lot of different markets to really drive trial and continue to drive trial. So we're seeing a very positive loop between trial packaging and adoption of the brand going forward. So that's what's driving this in a lot of different markets.
Our next call is with Lucas Ferreira of JP Morgan.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for the questions. My first one is also in Brazil. Wanted to ask you about the competitive environment. You mentioned great execution as being one of the main factors behind your market share expansion. But wondering how do you see the competitive environment in Brazil and also the consumer, if you can already see the consumer trading up and also maybe even being accepting some price hikes. So would you think that this could be the case for the year? Could you be offsetting part of this cost pressures or the IPI issue with prices throughout the year, given this strong volume performance you're seeing? That's my first question. And the second question is regarding costs. If you guys can remember us where we stand in the curve of costs going forward in your main markets. We saw already some relief in the sweeteners. If you can see also some more relief in the other main lines going forward, if you can remember, that would be great. Thank you very much.
Well, competitive environment in Brazil remains strong. It's important to highlight, as we've mentioned before, that we are competing in a market where we have fully integrated players. We both have beer and soft drinks in the marketplace, and that definitely provides for a very different dynamic than in many other markets. I mean, under that competitive environment, we continue focused on doing our job, which is increased point of sale execution, increased levels of service to our customers, innovative initiatives on the digital side to capture more consumer occasions, and at the same time we're focused on our portfolio. So it's a matter of in our point of view. It's a matter of acknowledging that you are competing in a very tough environment, but at the same time, focus on your strategies and delivering against your strategic initiatives. So that's what I would like to mention regarding competitive environment in Brazil. As I mentioned before, on the consumer side, we're definitely seeing more optimism in the consumer. That has been reflected in increased demand activity in many categories, and that is definitely a tailwind for us going forward in Brazil. On the cost side, we're seeing stable costs. Sugar prices in our key markets, we believe, will remain quite stable in the upcoming months for the rest of this year, and the pressure that we have on PET should ease, and we see more stable prices by the end of the year. So in that particular regard, in COGS, we think we have a pretty stable outlook going forward, unless any unexpected factor kicks in that we have not foreseen currently. I don't know, John, if you want to comment on Brazil.
Lucas, I think one of the things that's very encouraging is that we've seen consistent growth over many quarters, and it's volume driven and transaction driven, and we have a very strong portfolio. And throughout that period of time, and even during, I think it was March that we took some, beginning of this month late March, we took some pricing, and we continue to see continued volume momentum, not affected by pricing. So the price realization that we're getting in Brazil is within the expectation of a recovering market, and I think something that will continue. The question for going forward, I think, is not so much if we're going to take much more pricing. The issue is going to be, can we maintain the volume growth? And I think from the numbers that you're seeing and that we're just reporting, we'll probably see on the back end of the market, as we lap high numbers, continued growth, but at a declining rate. So I think the first half of the year is going to be exceptionally strong and then coming down to a more normalized level of growth. But what's very encouraging here is that the revenue line is a very solid revenue line, and it looks like it's sustainable. And within the marketplace, we're seeing less, I would say, deeper discounting than we've seen before. So that's also an encouraging sign.
Thank you very much.
And with Goldman Sachs, we'll hear from Luca Spacchia.
Almost. Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. A follow-up, I think you partly already answered. But I was hoping you could explain the relative performance that maybe you are showing in Brazil compared to the rest of the system of Coca-Cola aggregate numbers. It seems quite visible and quite remarkable in this quarter, but also has been a while. Maybe just the logic of that explains, you know, the gap or the fact that you are outpacing, it seems to me from the numbers, the rest of the system from a volume perspective. And then, you know, same question, smaller market, but if you can remind us why in Argentina, instead, it seems that, you know, whenever there is a significant sort of macro volatility, the multiplier or results on your volumes is greater and you know, comparatively, your decline seems to be greater. Maybe if you can just share some comments on these two relative trends, that would be great.
Sure, Luca, thank you. I think a couple things. First, in Brazil, we have in the sparkling segment, we have a very deep portfolio, and we have a very, very large portfolio of returnables. And I think if we compare that versus other bottlers in Brazil, we have a disproportionate amount of returnables than the rest of the Brazilian players. And one that we continue to build on the multi-serve side very aggressively. And like I said, we're looking not only to grow Coca-Cola, RefPet, but also to get it into Coca-Cola, Sin Azúcar, And so we're leading the pack on that. We continue to invest very aggressively on that. Second is on the non-carbonate side. You know, we talked about this before. We had 100 launches last year. We redesigned our whole portfolio. And that's something that we've done as the leading bottler in Brazil. And I think the rest of the bottlers in the system are following that lead aggressively, but there's probably a timing gap difference there. But we have done that. There's other things that I think we're doing that are more endemic to Coca-Cola FEMSA. First, we continue to invest very importantly in cold drink equipment. So, you know, compared to the history in Brazil, the last 3 years in Brazil, we've been putting in, you know, very strong initiatives on cold drink, and it's been paying out for us. So I think it's also just, you know, when you start looking at what business we're in, we continue to be drinking and going out there and putting out more and more capability to execute in the marketplace along all channels, and that's been important. And the fourth piece is, I think, on the digital piece. And that digital piece has many components. But the first piece is the analytic piece. The second piece has to do with the way we're going out there and servicing our customers with much more focus and information on digital. We're working with food aggregators in a manner that is probably state-of-the-art for Coca-Cola FEMSA and Coca-Cola in Latin America. So there's a lot of things that we're doing in Brazil that are doing very well for us. And so I think that would explain, it's not one thing that explains the difference. There's a lot of different things that explain the difference. And I think also, if you look at certain areas, we're doing well in beer also as a traditional category, and probably that is not as important in other franchise territories as it would be for Coca-Cola FEMSA. So it's an aggregate set of components that are making our performance differentiated versus our other bottling companies. That being said, let's turn to Argentina for a second. I think in Argentina, you have to remember that, you know, most of the inflation that has come, well, the Argentine, the Buenos Aires area has been hit by a disproportionate amount of inflation. When you look at these numbers, you know, the elimination of subsidies on electricity, the elimination of transportation subsidies have been hit in the Buenos Aires area. So the effect to the other rest of the countries has not been as important as what the inflation we have in Buenos Aires. So our objective in Buenos Aires is to stay ahead of the pricing curve or within the pricing curve and trying to really play a very difficult game and make sure that we're ensuring we're, you know, engaging with the consumer and not losing margins. So, yes, we are below what other people are, but I think that the jury has to be put out with a complete vision of what the vision of our profitability is along with, you know, share and volume. So I think it's a difficult context. We're not necessarily on the top line in terms of volume performing stellarly versus other bottlers, but I would think that from a margin and profit perspective, we're there or better, okay? And secondly, we're adapting fast to the holes that may be opened up in terms of our packaging portfolio relative to the consumer. So those are going to be things that we are adjusting to during the second quarter. And it's a very fluid circumstance because obviously the Argentine issue continues to evolve, be dynamic, and it does not look like it's going to be a short-term issue as we thought, you know, for the first half of this year.
Absolutely.
Does that answer your
very
question?
Clear. Thank you. Absolutely. No, very clear, very very informative. Thanks.
And we'll move to our next question, and that is Leonardo Frantavia of Bradesco.
Hi, good morning. I have two questions, please. The first one is, I understand that Heineken has launched a new carbonated drink brand in Brazil, including colas and lemon and some flavors that might compete with some of your products in today or in the future. So if you could just share some of your thoughts on that. And the second question, I know you commented about the IPI tax in Manaus, but just to be clear, there was, if I'm not mistaken, some ruling by the Supreme Court in Brazil today allowing this credit to be used by beverage companies. I don't know if that changes anything for you and this benefit going forward. If you could also provide some color on that. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. I think the launch of a carbonated soft drink by Heineken or whomever at this point is something that we see continuously in the marketplace. You know, this is either we do this, we see this either because of whether it is a house brand by retailers or because you know it's just general affordability. This is something that there's always a space of new exits at low values. And this is something for Brazil that is not new. So I'd say that when I looked at it and we saw it, it's something that is, I think, recurring, normal, and something that I think they're probably doing the right thing for their portfolio, but not necessarily, I think, something that we have a tremendous amount of concern about, but something that we'll keep our eye out on. You know, so I think it's, you know, it's something more than anything else, you know, to revitalize what they had in their portfolio already of their carbonated beverages. Secondly, I think, you know, you talk about the ruling on the credit, and I think you're talking about the Nokia case. I think it looks very favorable. It's a landmark case. And the impact that it would have for us is really eliminating any past contingencies that may be out there. And going forward, I think, you know, the tax implications and the tax rules that are in place today are the ones that we're looking for. And it just basically has an effect of, if you want, cleaning up potential contingent liabilities in Brazil. And I think in that sense, we're looking at it and it looks very favorable at this point.
Got it. Just to follow up on that, do you have an idea what would be the benefit on 2020 onwards, or this is still to be defined?
We're still assessing
the 4%.
We need to understand the ruling more. It just happened a few hours ago, 24 hours ago, I think, or less. So we need to understand it better with our team in order to provide an outlook and an interpretation for that going forward. So for now, I would say we're status quo, as we've stated in the past. I would not like to pronounce myself on any forward outlook of that particular element until we have all the understanding of the implications of the ruling. So we can follow up on
got
that
it, thank you very much.
Later on or in the next call, if that's okay for you.
Sure, thank you.
From UBS, we'll hear from Alan Alanis.
Thanks so much for taking my question. Also regarding Brazil operations, You reported like a 5% in pesos, and if my numbers are right, and please correct me if they're not, this translates into a, like a 19% growth in revenues in Brazil. Well, first of all, congratulations for that. That's an amazing number. But I wanted to know, given the numbers that you show on beer and in soft drinks, it seems that beer grew much faster, above 30% growth in revenue of beer, and around 14% your revenue growth in soft drinks. So the question is, why are we seeing such a much faster growth in beer in Brazil relative to soft drinks?
Well, thank you for the question. As we said in the last call, I think we need to be respectful of Heineken's trading update that they did recently a couple of days ago. So I would not go beyond the explanations that they've given. As they stated in their trading update, the beer portfolio for Heineken has been growing double digits across all Brazil and across their portfolio. We don't represent all Brazil and all of their portfolio, but we're pretty much in line with their growth figures. And what I would say is that we're seeing a very solid development and performance of the premium brands in the portfolio. In the case of the Heineken brand, as well as I would say the mainstream proposal under the Amstel brand in Brazil. So the consumers are appreciating two very strong and solid brands in that portfolio that are performing well and that have been handled very well by the brand owners. And that is an interesting dynamic that is occurring right now in the Brazilian market that's driving a very good growth in that particular segment, which is translating also in important market share gains for them. That I would refer to the Heineken team to give you more details on that particular one. But, yeah, we're seeing a very solid growth and performance behind the brands.
But anything from the categories themselves? Because this is something that has been going on for years now, that we've been seeing basically beer volumes performing better or declining less during the recession and now growing faster than soft drinks. Anything particular in the categories that we should be aware, irrespectively of this quarterly results?
Well, I think as you mentioned, it's a sustained trend. I think that in the particular case of beer, when you look at pure malt value propositions, they're being very well received by the consumer. And in the case of our portfolio, as I mentioned before, the Heineken brand and the Amstel brand are parts of that very strong consumer trend, which is a particular dynamic within the beer category. And we're fortunate enough to be playing in that space. John, I don't want to,
got
you
it.
Want to elaborate on that a little more?
No, I think, again, Alan, one of the things that we do see is that we have a much broader consumer in terms of different categories that we play in. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from water to isotonics to juices. So the day parts are different. There's a lot of different reasons to get into that. I do think when you start looking at this is that there is a clear trend of gaining share in beer that we've been able to sustain over the last, six quarters. That continues within premium segments, which makes it even much more revenue effective, if you want to look at it like that. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. the numbers that you're talking about are correct in terms of revenue growth.
Right.
And when you start looking at where we're gaining share in beer, it is in the more premium segment than it is in the basic segment. But so that's driving the growth. And so, the consumer over there is shifting towards more and more towards a premium segment. And when we talk about revenue is one thing, when we talk about transactions is another.
Mm-hmm.
We've been looking at growing transactions in our base business in Costa very fast.
Okay.
Also, when we start looking at transaction growth over there, it's been significant. Again, I think what you're comparing is, a market leader that has dominant or very, very significant position like Coca-Cola versus brands that have a lot of headroom for growth. and there are different dynamics.
Got it. Thank you. And a quick follow-up on another topic, just pure soft drinks. The question is, in terms of the pricing that you take, both in your, and it is related to a question that I think that Luca was asking before, but also now applied to Mexico. I mean, is there a difference in terms of the pricing action that you take in Argentina relative to the rest of the system? And the same question for Mexico. I mean, in other words, is the change in performance of volumes relative to the rest of the system explained at all by a different pricing strategy both in Mexico and in Argentina relative to the other bottlers?
Yes, I think it's a very accurate question and a very accurate observation, Alan. I think, you know, we have been much more aggressive in Argentina than other bottlers in terms of taking pricing.
Okay.
And we've been ahead of the curve on pricing than the rest of the bottlers, and for different dynamic reasons. Because inflations are different and the economics are different in different places. And secondly, in Mexico, we are also, you know, probably, you know, not in lockstep with the rest of the bottlers. We're closer. But, you know, there is difference in timings. And we're probably a little bit ahead.
Got it. That's very useful, John. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
From HSBC, we'll hear from Carlos Laboy.
Yes, good morning, everyone. The comparable growth algorithm for Mexico Central America division of minus 2 volume, plus 7 revenue, plus 12 EBIT, it's impressive. How much of that revenue is revenue growth? How much of it is rate? How much of it is mix? How much of it is it's different, better management of trade discounts would be one question. And then related to that, this sustained focus on price increases, which seems to be a break with historic philosophy in Atlanta, is this likely to go on for quite some time here? And how important is it, John, for you to have the strategy to meet your ROIC and your organic growth challenge?
Hey, Carlos, how are you? Listen, I'm very encouraged to see what we're doing on pricing. Yes, we are pricing up ahead of inflation, and we've done so over the last couple of years. Now, that has, and what we've seen so far, has been pretty much price and rate, okay? And due to that fact, we've been doing a lot of revenue growth management on this. And what we're seeing is, because of the analytics that we have in place, you know, being able to get better returns on our invested dollar at trade. So it's I think that there's – it's a little bit of more targeted, you know, pricing. Primarily this year, it's been more looking at multi-serves to make sure that we're continuing to, you know, have relative prices between a curve of packages that make sense for the consumer. And I think in putting it in your terms, it's more rate than it would be mix. The second thing is we've seen enormous amount of progress where we put out revenue growth management tools in terms of being able to lower discounts, okay, and become very effective in terms of managing discounts, you know, in both Mexico and Colombia. And that has been a part of the driver also of being able to realize higher pricing. But the focus going forward, I don't think, is necessarily going out there and just focusing on higher rate. It really is, from here on out, is looking at going out there and driving more initiative mix, okay, and focusing more on single-serve packages on a profitable basis and putting that together as we go forward. And I think that's the next step that we have to work on as a team to be able to continue to drive revenue growth. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there, and we'll be taking very significant actions on that for the second half of the year as we get our tools in place to do so. So, you know, I think that, you know, that's the first question. The second question you asked is on WAC and ROIC. Well, obviously, that's a very important, you know, configuration. I think as we go forward, you know, we're seeing a couple of issues in terms of, okay, it's encouraging to see that Brazil's coming back in a very significant manner, and that should play an overall big positive for the ROIC on Coca-Cola FEMSA. The Mexican ROIC is within acceptable ranges. The issue there is growth. Okay. The Colombian ROIC is something that we have to go out there and reestablish. Okay. over the last 3 years, and especially this last, 2 months or 3 months, we're restructuring the business. We've taken very significant actions in Colombia in terms of, first, price increases that are very significant. Secondly, we took out, about almost 300 people of our staff to be able to go out there and adjust the business to its new economic reality. And the third thing is we're also being much more selective on DME to be able to go out there and sustain economics. And what is surprising is to see how well, we're doing relative to plan and how all of a sudden we're seeing this market bounce back. We're working a lot on SKU rationalization, both on in all of our territories, but more so on the non-card business, And we're getting very deep, along with the Coca-Cola company, and this is something that we're doing very jointly, and at the hip, on non-carbon profitability and understanding where that is and what our issues are. And I think we're moving a lockstep along, with Coke and trying to develop a broader and more fundamental basis of understanding of ROIC, And I think, it's been very encouraging to see how, as a system, we're working jointly to go out there and get that ROIC above our WACC. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I think, going forward, those are metrics that the system has very top of mind, And I think, again, I'd emphasize it's a system issue already, and it's not necessarily something that is, one-sided or a buffer issue.
That very helps. Helpful. Thank you. Yep. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We'll next hear from Alex Robards with Citi.
Yes, hi. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for taking the question. So it's really first about Colombia and then second about non-carbs. So you told us last quarter that you've executed some restructuring measures in Colombia to respond to the VAT changes and such. We see kind of a tough first quarter here with volumes down about 9%, I guess. But can you give us an update on how the right sizing of your footprint is going there, specifically in response to these changes at the VAT? And maybe in the answer, if you could give us a sense of how you've seen the competitive activity in the first quarter. I mean, I guess this is the first time your main competitor, Postobon, is going to market with a beer, and I wonder if that's changing the dynamics at the points of sale and the receptivity of your product. So that's kind of the first question. And just the second one is really taking advantage of John being with us here on the call. You mentioned a few things around the non-carbonated beverage strategy, and as you think about it, with new categories and such. And I guess the question is this: Atlanta has talked about reaching certain goals on the global Coke volume level as far as where they like to see non-carbs be and get to as a percentage of total volumes. The LATAM bottlers skew below that, and there's several structural reasons for that. But as you think about your non-carb strategy over the medium term, how much is the non-organic component really a piece of that, or are you really just kind of thinking about it from an organic growth standpoint? You mentioned in the fall in New York when you were here that M&A is something that you look at in the non-carb space, maybe even Brazil. Your balance sheet, you have some debt capacity, obviously, from the Philippine proceeds. But so just wondering if you could comment on M&A and the non-carb outlook. Thanks very much.
Right. Alex, this is Constantino. I'll take your first question and then refer to John. Having John here will be very important to answer your second question. In the case of Colombia, as we mentioned, we are focused mainly, Alex, on five key pillars of the strategy. First, pricing.
We've done some important pricing and redefining our pricing architecture across our portfolio in order to mitigate some of the impacts that we're facing for the new environment. That's already in place. Secondly, very tight cost and expense control. As John mentioned, we have taken some very tough measures that are always very painful in terms of reducing our headcount in Colombia in order to right-size the organization, and that's already in place. Third, we've done some very deep SKU rationalization, and we continue to look at that. And that is also connected to our fourth element, which is our, you know, restructuring and redefining of a route to markets in Colombia. As you probably know, Colombia is really a mix of very different realities. It's not the same to operate in highly dense urban, you know, configurations like Bogota. There are many, secondary and third and small cities in Colombia. And what we're doing right now is redefining our route to market per type of market right now. We've done some important redefinitions, for example, in Cali, and we're extremely optimistic of the results that we're seeing there. So behind that, we have a very agnostic look at the way we deploy our route to market in Colombia, and that is allowing us to redefine the way we do it much more efficiently and effectively in the market. And at the end of the day, this is basically a very, you know, deep process of redefining and redeveloping our route to market and supply chain to improve our efficiency across the operation. So it's an ongoing process in that regard, but we're very optimistic of the results that we're seeing in some of the cities where we're experimenting some very innovative ways of going to market, or in some cases, redeploying basics and fundamentals of this particular business that we had changed for other objectives. I mean, it's important to call out that Colombia has very low drop sizes in the traditional channel, and that requires being extremely efficient with your route to market. And, you know, our traditional way of going to some of these channels with a red truck is not necessarily the best way to serve them right now in this, you know, very adverse environment that we're facing. So it's a combination of those four different pillars that we're implementing right now. And as I mentioned, it's a continuous process, and we hope to have more stability and clarity on this particular one in the upcoming months. By the end of this year, I think we'll have a fully embedded new business model in Colombia adapted to the new environment. So with that, I'll flip it over to John for your second question.
I think just complementing the first question, I think, we have a big pending issue in delivering results in Colombia. Okay? There's no doubt about it. But I am also, at the same time, as we speak about that, very excited about where we are, because, you know, we have an exceptional asset base. We have good brands. And the only way we're going to get out of this is by growing. And I think the fundamentals that I see in the team, portfolio approach and our execution, is all starting to give results. So, you know, I'm very optimistic that, you know, the solution in Colombia is going to be relatively fast, okay? And also the level of collaboration that they have with the Coca-Cola company is fantastic. So, you know, I think both those issues, you know, are going to be there. On non-cards, I think, you know, your question is whether we grow organically or not. I think, first of all, we see a lot of opportunity to continue to rationalize our SKU portfolio in non-cards, focus on profitability, really start with focusing on what we would call our real gasoline type of SKUs, which are few, and continue to grow through innovation. Isolita is one of these type of products. You know, continue to look and explore. And continue to do that organically. I think we have the balance sheet to be able to do any kind of organic or inorganic acquisition at this point. You know, between the debt capacity and the equity capacity that we have, we're probably between, you know, we're closer over $5 billion worth of capacity. So, but I would say that those are really bolt-ons, okay, and regional plays more than, you know, kind of Latin plays that we'd look at this point in time, and where it makes sense, we'd do it. You know, and we're always looking for those type of opportunities. So, it'd be hard to answer that question more specifically, but, you know, in terms of new categories, I mean, there's always, you know, things that we're developing and understanding better. Dairy is always an area that we're trying to understand better and perform better, and we're doing that in a lot of different markets. I'm very satisfied with what we're doing in Brazil, very satisfied with what we're doing in Mexico, and we're looking to, you know, turn around the situation in Central America, I think, much better. And, you know, so that opens up a host of opportunities also, but they're minor bolt-on opportunities, I think, that would have a certain impact for us, and that we can leverage later on. I think more importantly is leveraging what we have currently, okay? We have the ability to go out there and have major assets such as Jugos del Valle in Mexico or Avis in Mexico, and looking at to see how we can go out there and regionally leverage the scale of those businesses into our Central American markets or North South American markets. So I think that's probably, you know, as important as a scale play as anything else. Is that helpful?
Very helpful. Thanks. Yeah, no, thanks a lot. That was very clear. Thanks.
Thank you.
It appears there are no further questions at this time. Mr. Santa Maria, I'd like to turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
No, I'd just like to thank everybody for, you know, accompanying us today, your interest in Coca-Cola FEMSA. And as always, our team is available to answer any of our remaining questions as you continue to, you know, plow through the information. And I think we're satisfied, and I'm satisfied how this year started off. And I'm very positive that the balance of the year looks good for us. So thank you very much for accompanying us, and we'll be talking in a couple more months.
This concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.